6:30 on the dot, and we'll call a meeting to order for our March 1st meeting of Board of Regents. Regent Higdon, our secretary, will do the roll call.
Good morning. Chair Bale.
Present.
Regent Ball.
Present.
Regent Brinkley.
Present.
Regent Ernst.
Present.
Regent Higdon.
Present.
Regent Henson.
Present.
Vice Chair Johnson.
Here.
Regent Mayer.
Present.
Regent McKinney.
Present.
Regent Nichols.
Present.
Regent Porter.
Present.
Mr. Chair, report that all board members are present in attendance.
And that is a great thing when we're all together, and thank everyone for making the effort to be here today. We have had at our disposal minutes from our December 14th. Fourth quarterly meeting, and hopefully everyone's had a chance to review those, and I'll entertain a motion to approve those minutes.
So moved.
Motion. Second. Second. Regent Porter. Any discussion concerning those minutes or corrections? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. And stand approved. Our Academic Affairs Committee is the next piece on our agenda, but before then, we would like to announce that our committees met on February 8th to discuss each item on their respective agendas and recommended submitting the agenda items to the full board for consent action with a few exceptions, those exceptions being Academic Affairs Committee item number 2, and the Executive Committee items 1 through 4. These items should be removed from the consent agenda for discussion and a separate vote. With that, I will turn it over to Regent McKinney and the Academic Affairs Committee.
Okay. The first item on our agenda is AA-1, which was presented and approved in committee meetings, approval of sabbatical leave requests. I hear a motion to approve AA-1.
So move.
Second. Second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Oh, I'm sorry. I was supposed to. Sorry. I'm bad at that. Would you like to talk on the sabbatical leaves at all? Does anybody have any discussion? Motion passes. The next item is AA-2, which is not presented at the meeting. Do I have a motion to approve the Meredith status appointment?
So moved.
Second.
All right, Juliet, would you like to make a presentation on this?
Yes, I would. Good morning. It gives me great pleasure to introduce Dr. Joseph Strafton from the Department of Philosophy and Religious Studies. Dr. Strafton earned his PhD in Biblical Studies from Duke University and joined WPAU in 1977. During his 42 years at WPAU, he taught classes on the New Testament, the life of Jesus, the life of Paul, the Dead Sea Scrolls, and he traveled several times with students to Israel and Greece. Dr. Trafton put his heart and soul into his life on the Hill. As a well-respected scholar and a highly effective professor, Joe received the well-deserved Distinguished University Professor Award in 2004. He entered into transitional retirement in 2014 to spend more time with his children and his grandchildren. Now that he has completed his 5 years as a transitional retiree, Joe will be sorely missed by his colleagues, friends, and students. And I would like to add that today he's joined by his wife, Paula, who also taught at WKU in university studies and also in history for a number of years. And according to Dr. Trafton, his wife has been central to all of his success.
All in favor of approving AA-2?
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? That motion carries as well. Thank you and congratulations.
Awesome.
All right. We'll move directly then to the Executive Committee. And we have listed first an information item, and Susan DeVries is with us here this morning. For those who got a glimpse of the news last night, Susan was on the news showing bits and pieces of the Commons project. It was pretty exciting to see it all up there. It's going to be a heck of an addition to this university. So,
I just want to thank the board and the president for his vision for this amazing project. Once again, you know, we have the privilege of John from Luckett and Farley and Brian and David Gross from Ansler, the architects in Chicago. So welcome, and I'm going to turn it over to them.
My name is John Whitney, and I'm the market director for higher education at Luckett Park. And we're here today with our colleagues from Gensler to present the schematic design, a summary of the schematic design for the Commons at Helm. We're very proud of this project. We're very pleased to be here, and we're honored to have been selected to do this project. I'd like to introduce my colleagues. We have Brian Watson, Dave Rose from Gensler, and then over there we've got Megan Webster and my colleague from Luckett Farley, Eric Andrew. So we're here today to talk about this project, run you through briefly the process that we've undertaken so far, and hopefully you'll find this project to be as exciting as we have.
Eric. So we were with you back in December. We showed you the process that we went through at that point. We're pleased to be back with some drawings and visuals of what it actually looks like that was on the news last night, it sounds like. So we're going to go through a couple slides to repeat where we were, and that this project is really based on the vision that has been set forward with the institution. And hopefully the invite, engage, grow, and radiate, you'll see as we talk through the project that these are really guiding North Stars for our design of the project. You'll see that through the renderings that we show you. It's all based in history, though. The building that's been provided for this project has historical roots on campus. And a lot of that energy and excitement and exposure of the rawness of the space, including even perhaps the center court, will make its way back into the final project. And when we talked in December, we talked a lot about why now, and that a lot of the classrooms that were around the arena was being used as a basketball arena looked on like the top left, but now they're looking more like the top right. Work used to look like the bottom left, now it's looking more like the bottom right. So this project for your institution is perfectly poised to let it be not only on the right-hand side, but perhaps even farther forward than that, so that you're ready for your future, ready for where the university, where the students are expecting your spaces to be. Our goal is not to take away from the student center. We have a very successful student center on your campus, but to rather create a commons that is a mixture of both social and intellectual. And you know, we see it as a destination, and the right-hand side of this frame is really kind of amazing, and using just current technology, and that the two parts of this library were made for this program that you've asked us to design. And that's where the books are very well situated in the existing building, but then all of a sudden, the helmet becomes the blog. It becomes the more social interaction aspect of the book. And this quote came out early from the steering committee, and just that our goal is to harness the social to power the intellectual. And that phrase in particular it really differentiates us from what a student-centered typically. Student center is usually all about social and creating those interactions, where now all of a sudden with the infusion of the librarian and the book, it really begins to create this amazing dynamic in space that we are enjoying designing for you. And if you think about what the libraries always were used for historically, it was a chance to open up your window to the world. It was a chance to see the parts of the world that you couldn't be to. And when we apply this to your campus, and the building in particular, it's an opportunity to open the window to the commons, and not only to see the campus that's outside, but also see the activity and the energy that's inside. Different than many of your buildings, or many buildings on academic campuses, where there are just, you don't really see the activity that's going on. I think what you'll see here now is that transparency allows for both to see what's going on outside and for the outside to see what's going on.
Right, and really this starts just by looking at the existing building and understanding what's really great about it. Things like the terracotta detailing, certainly the space inside that we looked at. And then also the things that really are opportunities that we can look at. So that west facade especially kind of looking back down the hill towards campus is really an amazing opportunity where we had the 60s edition. Back to that idea of, you know, opening up for the commons to the a window to the commons, thinking about what can we do there to treat that differently and really open up the building and have it connect with the campus. So that's really been our starting point, thinking about this building more as an open book, as opposed to something that's really kind of blocked. It was used in and out. And you'll see later, we'll walk you through the plans and the spaces and the exterior of the building, what that means in terms of connecting with the campus and how we're treating, you know, especially that face of the building and the associated green spaces along with it. You know, we talked last time about that window to the commons and treating that path, you know, back up the hill. So you've got the art building to the bottom of the page and this connection with Cravens. But where that 60s edition was, looking at taking that down and really opening that space up. And that's really a huge opportunity for the project. One, to better connect the campus, but then two, to better connect the building with the campus itself. One of the things we've really focused on with the site plan, A, is improving circulation, providing more green space and usable outdoor space, seating for students, but then also improving accessibility to the building so that anyone can get here, especially really connecting up with Colonnade, providing an accessible grade and path to the main entrance.
And I gotta say, one thing you see there is the service dock towards the State Street, Normal Street side of the building. Making sure that worked was a struggle, but we put a lot of brake power behind that, and we found a way to make sure that the trucks can get in there and then things can be delivered and the food servers can operate in an efficient manner.
And then thinking about this identity, so we want to be really connected with the campus. What is it that is about this campus that's unique? You know, looking at the limestone, certainly, so we have the existing building that's limestone, looking at bringing that in, looking at this rhythm of some of the buildings on campus that you really see, these colonnades. You know, we're also facing the colonnade at the old stadium. So looking at how we're looking at the facade, how can we respect that? But then also looking at something new. This is a new opportunity to really open that space and look at that energy inside. So how can we merge those two ideas? And we'll start to see that as we go. And then just looking at the building in section is important. One of the things that from day one we really focused on was this idea of connecting the spaces. And we talked last time about this gradient from the social to the intellectual and making that really connected. I think that's that. That's the heart of this project, and that really starts to happen in terms of how you move through the space.
And then let's use the section as an opportunity to orient people. So the bottom of the first, there's a basement. We're using that for a lot of the storage and backup house for food service. First floor is mainly food service. Second floor is a mixture of food service and library. And third floor is all library, teaching, innovation. So the building has naturally segmented itself. And then by reopening some of that floor plate to that original historic image that you saw, the views that will happen through the space will actually be quite dynamic. And then the exposure of the original trusses as well, where right now they're covered up, we'll be exposing those back so it'll really begin to feel very airy and great volume of space that you'll be able to feel all the way from that first floor food service area up to the third floor.
And then just walking you in plans, so we'll go through some plans and views of what these spaces look like. But as Dave mentioned, the first floor is really focused on food service venues, but then also mixing that with seating and collaboration areas. So we're trying to treat this as a space where it is a really social space, but it's also it's a library. So there are study spaces, group workspaces that are surrounded by whiteboards. So really creating that mix that's really active and dynamic, but then also is different from a student center. It's a place where you can study during the day.
We took tours with the steering committee, and one of the spaces that resonated the most were just the current food halls. The spaces that were just as efficient and functional as the food courts that we used to know in the shopping malls that have kind of been mixed with co-working. So when you apply that logic to a library space, it actually is quite perfect. It's very current, and what I appreciated the most is that it begins to create spaces that will be similar to the spaces that your students graduate into. So when they move naturally or when they graduate, if they move to other cities, there are established food halls that become these social gathering spaces for meetings to happen, for learning to happen. And to some extent, you're getting one of those infused entertainments. It also should be noted that we're adding an entry to this level. So in the bottom right-hand side, this food hall, the first floor venue, will will have direct access to the exterior of the building as well.
And I'm starting to look at these spaces. So what you see here is from that entrance. Looking in, so you see some of the food venues to the right. And this is one of these spaces that we talked about that's a vertical connection through the building, really actually stepping up the hill along the west side of the building and bringing that inside. So you start to see these seating terraces where people can occupy that space as they move up. Lounge seating as you come in, and then that filters to the back, really creating an open space that's connected and dynamic as you go through. And then looking at that from the second floor, you know, really starting to see that connection to the outside. This view back to campus is really critical. And by opening this up, you really start to see that. You start to see some of the greenery and that connection back and forth. We really see these, this is kind of the transition zone and that connection between the predominantly food space on the first floor up to that second floor, which is really the mixing bowl. And then getting up to that second floor, this is really the heart of the building. This is where we see the main entrance, right in the middle of the space. So you can start to see a connection with the old gymnasium as well, where we're looking at the center court at the center of the building, and that's really right when you come in, you see that. A good way to orient yourself. And this floor is really that space where you come in. I think one of the most important pieces here is the idea of having an info desk, and that space where you can find research specialists and librarians right away. Get that help you need. It's kind of a one-stop shop for students. But then also having things like the coffee bar, which is really an activator for the space and kind of almost like a retail space that you see from the exterior as you're coming up to the building.
The key thing here is as you come up from the lower level up this grand staircase, you're able to look down to the first floor. At this point here, you're also able to look up to the third floor, so you're aware of the entire building at all times.
And just starting to get a sense that this is basically coming in that main entrance. You know, food is really a good way to encourage interactions. It's something that's going to be a sticky space where people stay in the building more, which is really critical. And as John mentioned, you can start to see that view up to the third floor and the scale of the space. And on the east facade, opening up those arched windows that are already there, we're actually expanding those down so that they have more of a view out. Again, really bringing light into the space is critical. And then once you're up to the third floor, this is really the heart of the academic space. We have active learning classrooms that are really visible from that second floor as a destination up at that top. The advanced learning classroom is a critical space for faculty to use, so kind of having both of those visible and on display. And then surrounding that, having reference stacks and study spaces integrated within that around the perimeter. All of that looking down to the second floor, in a way kind of recreating that feel of the historic building where you had the opening at the upper seating zone down to the core. This is really recreating that in a way. Just a sense of that view and, you know, how dynamic this space is. But again, really, once you get up to this top floor, it's a little more subdued and really acoustics are critical, and that's something that we focused on as well. Making sure that the space has a buzz, but that also people can focus while they're here. And then starting to look at the building from the exterior and the campus, and what is this approach as you're coming up to the building? Like we talked about, that west facade is really the window into the commons from the campus. And how can we think about this building as a lighthouse in a way, and projecting that activity back out to the campus? But then also keeping things like this terracotta band around the outside, continuing that through that west facade, kind of replacing what was lost during the 60s edition, and in a way kind of putting that on display as well, is this historical piece of the existing building.
If you remember back to that image that we showed of the historical building on your campus and then also the Apple Store with the glass, you're clearly pulling out the historic, the attributes of a lot of your buildings on campus are this vertical order. And that's what you begin to see on this facade. So while there's a touch of transparency, it still brings that historic aspect of your campus with these vertical limestone, almost columns in this facade.
And then going to this view, so this is basically looking into that space on the south end of that west facade. Looking in where we had that two-story connection between the first and second floor, seeing the hill kind of reaching into the building, and really, you know, that path is critical, and that's going to bring you up the hill as well to the historic the hill. But then how can we really celebrate that and make it an integral part of the building and a way to pull people inside as well?
So the doorway on the right is the one that we talked about in the plan that would bring you right to the food commons. The doorway on the left at the top here is the one that would bring you right to center court. and right to that info comments for the library up above. So by having multiple entrances in the building, you really begin to handle traffic flow as well and give students that choice of how they want to enter the building to get right where they want to go. The other thing that I'll point out that you saw in the rendering of the plans, you know, our global research into workplaces, again, where these students are graduating into, is that the highest performing companies are the ones that give their students a choice of when, where, and how to work. So that photograph of the cubicle is so far beyond where the millennials that are graduating from your college are going to go working. What this allows is for us to create, again, that sort of feeling on your campus. So the students can choose when, where, and how to work in this library. They can choose to hit the librarian at the info desk right away. They can choose to go upstairs where it might be a little bit more of a quiet space, much like your current student center. When you go upstairs, it's a different experience when you're on the first floor. Or they can choose to be down in the buzz, the beehive of activity, down in the food commons. Or even now this is rendering that you begin to see the outdoor spaces. So I think what's remarkable about this is it's one building that currently is a library that only acts as a library. That now all of a sudden has really kind of merged two or three different interactions and experiences.
I'd like to just say one more thing about the actual appearance of the building. You know, almost all of the effort we're putting into this is on this west facade. So this is where the change will be. This is where people will be drawn. This is what they're going to see. But the other facades, the other north and the east in particular of the Elm building, are virtually unchanged. So the history is being preserved, but we're making a major intervention to indicate that this is a different world, different type of building.
So with that, we'd be open for questions or comments or...
I'd just like to say on behalf of Gensler, Luckett and Farley, the steering committee, the president, Airmark in particular, this has been a thoroughly enjoyable project. A lot of time and effort, blood, sweat, and tears went into this project, and I couldn't be more proud of all of our work on this project. So thank you.
Susan, what sort of feedback or input have you had from faculty on this?
So the steering committee that came together was represented by faculty from all the different colleges. So we had input from different faculty across campus from day one. I presented everything to all of the library faculty yesterday before it went out to the public. And everybody in the library is thrilled. We can't be more pleased with how this has evolved over time. I think people on the steering committee, faculty on the steering committee, expressed a real need for a place to meet up with fellow colleagues, with students, in a different environment without having to leave the campus. And this project provides that third space on campus that is just so desperately needed to really advance learning outside of the classroom, where people can come together and collaborate and move the spirit forward.
Certainly, as we look at competition for students in higher education, one of them being online and bricks and mortar universities, I think are more and more are going to need to have that third space or that place where you can do teamwork and critical thinking together and so forth. So it seems like this fits very nicely in what I read we need to be moving toward.
If I can add to that, I had a chance to be at Microsoft for 3 days last week with their Schools of the Future initiative, and they had schools from 30 different schools from around the world. And the first whole day of the conference, all they talked about was face-to-face interaction and the social skills that are so critical. They didn't even get into technology until day two. And what was remarkable about that was that's exactly what you're saying, is that that's our biggest responsibility as institutions and building spaces like this, is to teach those social skills that will be... All technology starts and ends with humans, so we have to teach those skills in this space.
Sure. I totally agree with everything you just said. This is impressive. And how you've integrated all of it. And now being responsible for e-learning online college, it is
this recognition of it's still human interaction. And we actually have to assist students in doing that because most of them are just taking the phone. So there's another element of these soft skills and this emotional intelligence we have to bring out. I'm just curious, we ask about the faculty, what do the students think?
Will Harris from the SGA, he's been given reports.
Yes.
And he's been one of our biggest fans from the get-go. And his input in the committee was so valued. He always brought the perspective of the student to every single meeting and every comment he made. Just total round of applause for Will. He was amazing. And he always made sure to bring back any concerns from the SGA back to the committee.
That was the most important thing. So they're the ones that determine whether this is a victory or not.
Could you guys elaborate a little bit on the timeline from you going forward?
I'd be happy to do that. Well, good to see you again. It's been a while. We're moving ahead essentially on schedule. There's always a few little minor delays, but we're looking at actually starting selective demolition in the building right after the end of the school year. So sometime in the late spring, we'll actually empty the building out and start removing everything that needs to be removed. We're looking at having construction start, the real construction start, sometime early in the fall. And as we move forward from there, depending on how long we ultimately think this project will take, we're looking at having this building completed by either late 2020 or early 2021. We still have to talk to some construction companies about how this process might go along and how quickly this project can be completed. So we're looking at a pretty good timeline here.
I will. Suzanne and her team have been heroic in their calling of their volumes. So it's usually something like that happens the last day of school, and then the contractor comes in and they're like, well, what are we going to do with all this extra material? Our team has been working really hard to call those questions. So I think that this June kind of selective demolition start will be easy to do because of the staff is in the local sense.
This has been pretty special. Whenever we talk about anything like this, Suzanne says, don't worry, I'll get it done.
And thanks to my amazing team and the library.
Very good. Any other questions?
Yeah,
on that?
One more question. So this glass wall, of course, looks quite spectacular. How environmentally sound is it? In the sense, we still have some old buildings with quite pure insulation. So what do you envision happening?
Well, we're doing a lot of things. So one is we're insulating the exterior wall of the building, which is not the case. So we are replacing interior insulation. Adding insulation to the roof as well. So holistically, that's a big part of it. The wall that we're talking about faces northwest. So orientation is directly west would be a bit of an issue from sunlight, but we're confident that the orientation actually is in our favor with how we're looking there. And then with the systems and the curtain wall system that we're looking at and the glass, that's come a long way, certainly since this building was built and the 60s edition was built. And that, along with our mechanical systems, which are actually really state-of-the-art with the chilled beam system, which is highly sustainable and efficient, that all together is making this a really high-performance building. So we're confident that we're right on.
Klaus, this is going to be a LEED Gold building, which is pretty good. And so we feel very good about the potential to be quite sustainable here.
Very good.
Okay. President Fung. Mr. Chair, I just want to remind everyone of how we got to this point. When I arrived about a year and a half ago, we had just signed a contract with Aramark that was going to provide funds to do one or two things, either renovate Garrett, which is a building that is well past the end of its useful life, or, and this is what I saw in the fall, build a brand new building that supposedly had collaborative spaces in it and food service, and we're going to wrap that building around health. And we, as an institution, paused and had a new librarian who was a leader in thinking about what libraries can be. And as much as some of my faculty colleagues who believe libraries are still about renting your cage and going in there and studying in a solitary way, that's not the way in which our students learn anymore. And so what we did was challenge ourselves to find a to create a space that was the epitome of applied learning in a student-centered institution. And I think that what you see today is really that. We're not doing this for anybody else except ourselves, but I will tell you, you will see very few examples of this nationally, but we're about 5 years ahead where everybody else is going to be. And so I'm pleased that we've pushed the envelope, we've taken advantage of an opportunity, and created a space for all of our students, including commuter students, who will have a place to stay and study and engage at the top of the hill.
Well stated, and the word pause, I'll take note of. That's an important thing to do. All right, any other thoughts, questions? Thank you all for being here with us again today. We look forward to the listening to that project, and I do think it will put us in a better position to compete going forward with higher education challenges.
Thank you.
Next four items on the agenda each need to be discussed and voted upon separately. The first one is with regards to some property in the College Heights Foundation and an agreement. We did hear about this at our last meeting, and Donald, I don't know if you're going to give an update or Brad Malweber.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The College Heights Foundation, as we updated you all in the committee meeting, purchased a house over on 1703 Chestnut Street for the future home of the College Heights Foundation, and we're offering that as a gift to the university. So I'm going to turn it over to Brad to talk through the property acquisition piece and the subsequent lease that we've arranged.
Our request today is the approval of two parts or two components of this exchange. First would be a authorization to accept gift of property from the College Heights Foundation to Western Kentucky University, and also the approval of the related agreements associated with the exchange of property to the university. Some of this information you've seen before, some of it will be new. This is our existing College Heights Foundation building, obviously very limited at the top of the hill with ADA accessibility challenges and some other issues with the building. Building was constructed in 1969, I believe. We received another gift from Mr. Cliff Todd, a philanthropist of the university, of $1 million to address our College Heights Foundation need. The foundation explored the renovation of the existing building. It was originally constructed in 1969 for $237,000. There were two things that the foundation looked at. First, they looked at potentially renovating the existing structure, and the cost came in at approximately $2.1 million. They then decided that that was too costly and pursued construction of a new building on site, raising the existing building and building a new building on site. And that was $3.8 million when the bids came back in. The College Heights Foundation Board elected to invest in an alternative proposal of the purchase of this property that we are proposing today for $950,000. This property is located on Chestnut Street, and approximately this is where the president's home is at. This is our parking lot on Chestnut Street, and Environmental Health and Safety is over here for reference. This property is 3 acres in this part of campus. We presently, the university owns these two homes here, this home, and this property at the corner currently uses for the doctoral program. And it's a large piece of property, 3.2 acres, located in this section of the city of Bowling Green. I did not mark this, but we do own property down in this section of this block. This is what the property looked like in 1909. We pulled some records last night looking at some history of what the campus looked like. This is pretty much what the campus looked like in 1909. 1909, surprisingly, was a very important year for the university. We acquired about 100 acres during the spring, summer, and fall of 1909. So this is what the campus basically looked like at that time. The house that we're going to receive as a gift from the College Heights Foundation is a 3,600 square foot residential building on approximately 3.2 acres. The structure was built in 1898, was fully remodeled in 1992, particularly the wiring was redone and some other things that were done at that point in time. It's appraised for $1.35 million and was purchased by the College Heights Foundation for $950,000 as a bargain sale from John and Susan Mint. The second part of this transaction, and one that we did not discuss in length at the last committee meeting, was the lease and option to purchase agreement. Those details had not been sort of ironed out, and obviously a few of those details may change a little bit, but for the most part, what you have received in your packet should be the completed agreement. The lease provides for, I like lease agreements, they provide, it's a good fence. So we've got the College Heights Foundation, a separate entity, WKU. Obviously, we're both separate entities, and so lease agreements are basically legal fences, how entities are to operate. And so it's important to get that fence set early on and correctly. The lease provides management terms to both protect WKU and College Heights Foundation. You see the terms, the extensions, the renovation, maintenance guidelines in that agreement, who's going to pay for insurance, who's going to reimburse for insurance, utility cost, operation, building support, those kinds of details in the agreement. Obviously, in that agreement, it also includes an option to purchase, and this option to purchase is to both protect WKU and College Heights Foundation. They're giving us a property. They don't want us to vacate them from the property. At the same time, if they ever decide that they want to sell the property, it protects us because then we can determine that if we want to continue to acquire the property or keep the property or allow that to be sold at that time. You can see what 1909 looked like as approximately 100 years ago. And so I expect this property 100 years from now will look in this area will look a lot very different than it does now. Action agenda item EX1 authorization, the first authorizations for WKU to accept the gift of property at 1703 Chestnut Street, and the second authorizations for WKU to enter into a long-term lease with options to purchase agreement for College Heights Foundation. So does anybody have any questions?
Questions, anyone? I think we can consider both of those at the same time. Maybe not.
I have one motion. Oh, yes, and one action. Yeah.
Entertain a motion. Motion from Bridget McKinney. Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? Questions? Comments?
Good question. Is there I noticed there was a transfer of, I guess, maintenance resources, an amount that was already being provided on an annual basis for the CHF building that exists now. That will transfer to this building, and that's how maintenance will be paid for from here on out, right?
That is correct. We were currently paying, supporting the foundation, $19,600. And so that will be, we'll set up the mechanism and the accounting to function the way it needs to for that based on operation.
The way I read that agreement, if there was an additional expense beyond that, the university would invoice the College Heights Foundation
that's
to cover that cost, correct?
That is correct.
So there is no other university request for additional funding related to maintenance?
That is correct.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. I have a motion and a second on the floor. Any other questions, comments?
Yeah.
What about that building?
I think it's yet to be determined. Opportunities there in the future. So I'm sure the university will, as in reclaiming the space potential. I think it would be well advised to, based on a $3.8 million price tag, certainly the opportunity will be to reclaim the space, in green space. So not to project that too far, Regent Ernst, when you think about the completion of the commons, these are all intertwined. When you think about the completion of the commons in 2020, 2021, the exiting of food service in Garrett Hall was at the end of its useful lifetime. As we think about what occurs at the top of the hill, Garrett likely will come down. And when that comes down, since we have a crane at the top of the hill with a wrecking ball, there's another little building just over to the side we might also do some work on. Coming summer 2021.
Any other questions? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion passes. Thank you.
Both of you for being here.
Along with the project. We have two items that have to do with athletic contracts. We'll take them separately, but with us here today is Craig Browning from the Athletic Foundation Board, and we will take item number two first, which has to do with approval of contract for our new football coach. Craig, thank you for being here.
Yes, sir.
Again, we didn't keep you waiting this long this time.
You did not think you could. I just came from a school assembly, so I started my morning off at 7:20 reading Dr. Seuss to a group of elementary school students. So the opportunity to get right out there is appreciated. Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, distinguished members of the board, I'm here in the capacity of chairman of the Community and University Relations Committee for the Hilltopper Athletic Foundation. So to speak to the first action, I think it's Coach Helton. Is that correct, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
So to speak to the action that the President has recommended to the board, at a recent meeting of the Hilltopper Athletic Foundation Board of Directors, the board passed a resolution, and we just felt that would be appreciated by the Board of Regents to at least know that the Board of Directors of the Hilltopper Athletic Foundation are in complete and full support of the hire of Mr. Helton and the contract that's been presented. We based that assessment on a couple of things that I'd just like to share with you. First of all, Coach Helton, his bio is very impressive, but he's also a known commodity in the sense that he was the offensive coordinator here at Western in 2014 and 15. He helped win bowl games in each of those years, as well as a Conference USA championship. Also in 2015, we finished ranked number 24 in the Associated Press final ranking, which was the highest ranking in school history, as well as school record 12 victories. We do believe that he had a significant hand in that success. In fact, he was one of four finalists in the country for the FootballScoop.com Offensive Coordinator of the Year Award. Additionally, he helped coach Brandon Dowdy, quarterback, wide receiver Taywan Taylor to several school records. The university was very highly ranked nationally in all of our offensive categories. So the style of football, if you will, was very fan-friendly. People were excited to come out to the games. And we talk a lot about Coach Brohm, obviously, being a significant part of that. But behind every great leader will be an assembly of other leaders that are significant contributors to their team. And if we look at those teams, the offense is what really stood out the most. And Coach Helton is an offensive mind. In fact, the last thing that we would add to that is during his 3 years away from the program, he spent two seasons at the University of Southern California, USC, as the passing game and coordinator and quarterbacks coach, and then also this past season as the offensive coordinator for University of Tennessee, and was in fact Coach Pruitt's first hire to that staff. So we think that he comes very highly regarded in the capacity that he's served in the past, and we think that the offer that's on the table for him is one that's fair and the full board of directors supports. I would also mention, as I'll speak to the next action when you get to that, the Hilltopper Athletic Foundation is comprised of over 2,200 members. over 2,200 dues-paying members that are fans, if you will, of Hilltopper Athletics, but also understand the importance of athletics in the academic community. Athletics are a doorway to the university. A successful athletic program brings more interest, more students, more visibility, and free advertising for the university. So we want to do everything we can to support the university in its efforts to have a top-class athletics program. And, you know, quite frankly, we don't have the budget probably to be as successful as we have been. We're near the bottom, I think number 12 of 14 schools in Conference USA from a total athletics budgets perspective. So for us to be able to attract the talent that we believe Coach Elton is, as well as the other coaches that we have, we're very pleased and feel like that we as a university and as a volunteer board, volunteer members of the Athletic Foundation have been able to work hand in hand along with our staff to be quite successful. So with that, we want you to know that we certainly support the hire of Coach Elton.
Very good. President Caboni.
Chair Bale, the changing of a football coach and the hiring of new talent, particularly after 2 years, is a difficult decision. But I've spent time with Coach Elton and his family, and they're going to be not just excellent. He's not just going to be an excellent head coach. They're going to be excellent ambassadors for our community, which is an important part of the job. He knows us. He knows the style of play to which we became accustomed, and we'll bring back the excitement that we need for this university to be successful. Young people choose WKU because of a total college experience, and that means everything from our library to our residence halls to our faculty to the degrees we offer to be able to spend time on the weekends and the evenings at athletic competition. For us to be successful, we need successful athletics, and I welcomed Todd Stewart's recommendation to hire Coach Elton, and we're glad that he's here.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion to approve the employment contract between the university and Coach Tyson.
I have a motion. Do I hear a second?
Second.
Bridget Porter. Any further discussion, questions, or comments? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion passes. Craig, I'll now ask you to come forward again. We have item number 3, which has to do with our athletic director employment contract.
Mr. Chairman, as we understand, there's a consideration to increase the base pay of athletic director Todd Stewart. At a recent meeting of the HAF board of directors, action was approved in support of Dr. Caboni's recommendation to advance the base compensation of Director of Athletics Todd Stewart to $270,000. In doing so, the HAF agrees to supplement the increase of $65,868 on an annual basis during the athletic director's 4-year contract. So, again, as we considered the request that was upon us as a HAF board, we took into consideration several things as it related to Todd Stewart and again, his resume. A lot of folks are familiar with what Todd did pre-WKU, but some may not be. In fact, in the community, I think it's a little known fact that he actually spent 15 years in the NFL, 9 years with the Indianapolis Colts organization, 6 years with the Cleveland Browns organization. In addition to that, he served 4 years as the associate commissioner of the Sun Belt Conference. So we actually hired him from the Sun Belt Conference. He didn't come in directly as the athletic director, but had the opportunity to grow and understand the dynamics of the AD as he was mentored by others. When the opportunity came for President Ransel at the time to hire him, I felt, and others on the board felt, that he was a good hire. Todd actually has now served in a tenure that places him fourth in the longest serving tenure of ADs of the 15 in our university's storied history. So he's been around for a while. You know, when you are in the position that he's in, Director of Athletics, I think every decision that you make is going to be under the spotlight and microscope, if you will. In my business on a daily basis, I make a lot of decisions. I like to think that I make the right decisions, Mr. Nichols, most of the time. But somewhere along the way, you know, it wasn't exactly as I thought it would be, right, when I said yes or no to a particular question or decision. So I think when you look at the director of athletics and you look specifically at Mr. Stewart's history, he's made a lot of really, really good decisions. He's given us an opportunity to come back and compete at the highest level within Conference USA. He was instrumental in getting us into Conference USA from the Sun Belt. In fact, our teams over the course of the last few years, we have 24 championships, which is well more than double anyone else in the conference, and by seven different teams. So it's not just one particular team that's achieving at that championship level. Certainly, you know, I could go over a list of the coaches that he's hired, the successes that that's brought, the ticket sales, you know, filling the stadiums and the arenas back up. But, you know, again, if you don't make the right decision and you don't know that at the time, I think there's a lot to be said about how do you handle when you the situation when you get to the point where you feel like you need to do something different. There's a lot of folks in this world that will try to sweep things under the rug. They'll stick their head in the sand and they'll say, you know, I'll just ignore this. It'll go away or it'll get better. And we don't believe Todd Stewart's one of those individuals. He's been faced with some tough decisions during his time. And we believe that he has shown that he can handle the position and do so in a very extraordinary manner. So I would also point out this, in addition to the championships, the current 85% graduation success of our athletic program and GPA in excess of 3.0 is at the highest level of success in the history of our athletics. I've heard him over the years talk a lot about the full and comprehensive value that the university brings to a student athlete, not just the opportunity to compete on the field or on the floor. So he cares about the students. Academics matter to him, and he has put processes in place to make sure that his staff and the coaches understand that. Additionally, from a community standpoint, the athletic department in the last few years has really stepped up, and they're logging well over 3,000 hours of community service on an annual basis. For someone that's been involved civically in this community for many years, United Way, Junior Achievement, several other organizations, I can tell you that it's great to see athletics as an ambassador in the community. And my employer, U.S. Bank, and I have worked hand-in-hand with them over the years in things such as the United Way's Day of Caring and other projects. So it's great to see the student-athletes out there as mentors to the young people in this community, and the coaches have been very involved and do a great job as well. So, Mr. Chair, again, the specific ask of the Athletic Foundation was to support the contract and do so not just with a resolution of concurrence, but also with a request to support you monetarily. So the dollar-for-dollar request that the president's asked to be added to his base compensation will be paid for through and by the Hilltopper Athletic Foundation and the private support of our members. Be glad to answer any questions that anyone might have.
Mr. Chair, I want to thank first Craig Browning and the HAF board of directors for their support. As president, there are a lot of things that are happening on a university campus all at one time. And one of the places historically you've seen challenges will be with athletics. And one of the most important relationships that any president has on a campus is with that director of athletics. And I will tell you, Todd Stewart is a remarkable KD. He has my full confidence, and I know he's doing the right things, which you heard about, to ensure that our student athletes perform, not just on the football field, but in the classroom, and they get their degrees and they're prepared for what comes after WKU. And for the vast majority of them, that is not going to be sports. That's going to be a career and working in the world. So I'm pleased with that. His performance there, and I trust him, and that's crucial
in these relationships. Number two, Todd has a four-year contract. For those of you who've been around for a while, you know, particularly in athletics, but in other positions as well, you don't want leadership entering the final year of a contract. That creates awful uncertainty for coaches. Not renewing that contract suggests to the individual in that position they should be looking for other positions. We don't want to be in that place. If we were ever in a position to try to replace the athletic director, you can't replace Todd, we would certainly be paying a heck of a lot more than $270,000. Right now, Todd is the second lowest base salary in the conference. This will move him up to the median, which I think is incredibly fair given the performance that we've had since he began his tenure. Last thing, and I know these numbers are difficult sometimes. This is the marketplace in which we play in athletics. And the expectation is that we're going to be successful in everything that we do. And part of that means we pay for leadership. We pay for leadership in lots of different ways. And I want to make sure that everybody hears that Todd earns this compensation, both from the performance, the management, the confidence we have in him.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
David?
Very quickly, I've watched Todd the entire time that he's been here and had several interactions with him and his staff through our relationship related to sports and television. The academic evolution of this program, maintaining outstanding talent, one of the finest people I've ever seen, Travis Hudson, keeping him here on this campus when he could undoubtedly go anywhere else. Todd's leadership, the loyalty of his support staff like Matt and Craig and people like that that have stayed here, the loyalty of the Bowling Green and area communities to him, I think it's a value at this suggested amount. And if it could be more from the HAF, I would support that as well. With no additional cost to the university, I think this is an outstanding value and hope that it moves without exception.
And you just made a motion.
I'd like to make that motion if it's all right with you.
Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
Any further discussion, comments? If not, all those in favor say aye. Opposed, like sign. I'd like to thank Craig Browning for being here. It makes me think of the other boards that serve our university, Foundation Board, College Heights Foundation, Student Life Foundation, and people like Craig who serve selflessly on those boards are really great credit to this university. Craig's a busy man for him to come and spend half more with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. Freedom Bell, before Craig leaves, I put in a plug. Tonight is the U.S. Bank sponsored art show at the Kentucky Museum starting at 6 o'clock. And for those of you who are in Bowling Green or still in Bowling Green tonight, I urge you to drop by. It's a wonderful, wonderful partnership between U.S. Bank, the university, and the community of Bowling Green.
And that's been going on for 25, 30 years?
26, I think this is the 26th year anniversary.
Yeah, I used to have it in Glasgow.
Yeah.
Early years, but it is great.
For anyone who can join at the Kentucky Museum, it's a fantastic show. Yeah. Over 400 entries once again. 60-mile radius is basically the requirement for anyone to enter their works, but it is it's a fabulous show. It's always different from one year to the next, and I suspect I'll see you there tonight, President Caboni, as we hand out awards, no doubt, once again. So, thank you again. Have a great day.
Thank you. All right. The final action item for the Executive Committee concerns our annual salary recommendation for the President, and specifically details of the salary and contract that pertain to a bonus.
Mr. Chair, it's part of the responsibility of the executive committee is to evaluate our president with respect to his employment contract. That task has been accomplished under that employment contract. There are specific metrics, performance goals, rewarded innovation, rewarded visionary action, rewarded specifically performed. And I'm happy to report to our fellow members that the president has excelled in exemplary fashion in all those areas. And of course, with our employment contract, I would like to know that we award our president the performance bonus that we enticed him with, $40,000, which represents 10% of the criteria set forth in the employment contract.
I'll second that motion. I have a motion and a second. Discussion, comments? I'd like to make a few. As Regent Higdon alluded to, this contract included several areas that we were going to be interested in. I think since that hiring, you know, it's a changing playing field all the time. We're seeing new challenges come up, whether it has to do with the pension situation or whatever, but have a list of some of the accomplishments, and it really is dizzying to read and to think of what all has been addressed and accomplished in the less than 18 months or so that he's been here. But as we all know, we've had a, very successful strategic planning process, climbing to greater heights. We've now adopted as our mantra, student-centered applied research university. As Regent Johnson can attest, there's been yeoman's work done with regards to budget and specifically doing things that aligned expenses with income. Not an easy thing in this environment. He has been over the state and over our county regions untold times, meeting people, creating relationships, which come back to Western in many, many different ways, as we see from the Commons Project. That is but one of many strategic changes that are going to happen, first year village, changing our admission standards. And I think we can all take a great deal of satisfaction from the fact that already we're seeing some fruit paired from increasing retention rates, really a rather dramatic improvement from first semester of this year to this semester. And I think we'll see more to come. Having spoken with all of the regents at different times, not just the executive committee, but I think certainly I have the sense that we're all in agreement unanimously that our president has been diligent in his efforts and given 100% to the job. So anyone else that would like to make a comment, feel free to.
Well, I'll reiterate what both of you all said. I think one of the things that we all thought about when we were looking for a president was shared governance, change in direction, how to address problems that perhaps none of us even saw coming, and certainly you didn't, and still grow. I think that's remarkable, and I'm glad you're here.
I wanted to speak up on a couple issues concerning employees, and so I'm very pleased that we are going to do a salary study done by Simpson, which will look at salaries versus benchmark where we are, and I'm also very pleased that we are looking at a more uniform system of personnel evaluation, which is more transparent, more accountable than what we have had in the past. And my final comment is, I'm glad that we're changing our budget model to this grant model. I mean, I'm not sure how it's going to work out. I think all of these things I just mentioned, it will take a while before we see the benefits of it. But I believe strongly that the change was needed, and we're making the right moves to change.
Thank you. nothing great's ever happened without some portion of leap of faith, whether you're hiring a new president or adopting a new budget model or a strategic plan or whatever. But I appreciate those observations. Any other comments? George?
You sort of ran when I arrived. And higher education is going through a very disruptive time. And everybody's struggling, trying to figure out, how do I make it today, and what am I going to look like? And there are not a lot of places that have leaders that can manage both of those, all of the issues that are happening today based on what I look like today. And it's shifting to what that is for the future. I think we have one. I think Dr. Boney is a visionary, but he's also someone that can develop a plan and execute to where we ultimately want to get to. And we're very, very fortunate that he was attracted to Western. When I was listening to Craig talk about how fortunate we've been that people just want to get here and we sort of grow. Really excited that we just sort of got here and that, you know, we're on the path. And you're right, there are a lot of things that we're going to have to do. They will be painful. Yeah, they will be painful. But if we keep focused on what we're trying to be, which is to meet the needs of what the future students are going to be required to be successful in their lifetime. And it's not about what we do at the college, it's about what we do for them, for the benefit of them in their in society. I think we have a great leader.
Thank you. I think he came into a tough budget and enrollment situation. I'm extremely excited about going to the ramp model. I think we need to change immediately. I'm very excited about the retention efforts, and I'm impressed that you weren't scared to change our enrollment standards, even though that might negatively affect our enrollment.
Sure. Dr. Boney, with the cards that you were dealt, you've done a hell of a good job. I feel that way.
All right. Any other comments before I call for a vote? If not, all those in favor of approval of the annual salary recommendation as presented, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign.
Mr. Chair, may I interrupt the quorum of this meeting to ask for a standing ovation for the
time? No, no, no.
Does anybody need a break?
I always do. yes, please, yes.
5 minutes. All right, we will reconvene and go directly to the Finance and Budget Committee. So, Chairman Johnson, I'll ask you to take over.
Thank you, Chairman. Well, these are all, we have 5 action items today's agenda. All 5 of the action items that we discussed at our February 8th committee meeting. So, voted with approval. So, I will ask if anyone wishes to remove them, anyone or all of the action items, let me know.
I need to abstain from it.
You're not asking it to be removed?
No.
I guess a point of order. We're going to vote on all of them together, and
you can vote on that one separately for his benefit.
All right, I'll do that. So for purpose,
can we vote on FB2 separately, too, please? The tuition and fee.
All right, we'll do that. So FB1 and FB2 will be removed from the consent agenda. Anything else? Okay. So we'll start with the FB1 acceptance of the auditor's report and financial statements for WKYUTV. And radio station for the year ended 6/30/2018. Do I have a motion?
I move to be approved.
Motion by Regent Porter. Second.
Second.
Regent McKinley. Any further discussion on that particular item? Hearing none, again, all for vote. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Any abstentions?
Stay.
All right, we move to FB2, which was also removed, and I'll entertain a motion of approval of the 2019-22 tuition and mandatory student fees. Hear a motion?
Move.
Regent Higdon. Second.
Second.
Regent Ernst. Any discussion or comments regarding FB2?
Yeah, I just wanted to add, obviously I'm going to vote no to this, just increased cost of students, but I realize the university is doing all that it can for the future to steer clear from additional cost of students, and I do commend President Cavone for looking at things such as retention and increasing the budget model, which I think in the future will help alleviate that cost once we get out of our deficit, and
anybody else? No further comment.
I appreciate the comment, and while we are voting on a tuition increase, I want to help remind people of a really important point for this institution. In the past year and a half, we've been readjusting our aid strategy, sliding it down the need curve, doing everything in our power to remain affordable to every student who wants to be part of this university. And I think the mistake we make sometimes is looking at sticker price. We can't look at sticker price. We have to look at the net cost to students. And one of the things I'm most proud of that we've been able to do as a university is keep our net price at a place that is incredibly competitive and a remarkable value for what our young people get here at WKU. And we know that our net tuition in the previous year, our net price was $11,817. That's tuition, books and fees, and cost of living in a residence hall. We worked really hard to keep that number. And we know that is thousands of dollars cheaper, $8,000 less than the University of Kentucky, $7,000 less than the University of Louisville. But what most people don't realize is the net price is also less. At Eastern Kentucky University, it's less than Morehead University. We are committed to making sure every young person who wants a WKU experience can have it, regardless of their family's economic condition. And so I understand the tuition increase is always difficult, but I want to put it in context of the work that we're doing to keep our net price competitive in the marketplace.
Thank you, Dr. Smiley. Any further comments?
Could I ask you to elaborate when you talk about a net price? What does that actually constitute?
So it is everything that a student would pay for, tuition, room and board, books, living expenses, that's the total, minus discount, not loan discount, grant discount. And so one of the things that we're able to do by discounting our tuition, when you think of a net tuition model, is for students who are more needy to bring that tuition down where it's more affordable. We've seen in the state of Kentucky a dramatic increase in the institutional aid given to students because of the affordability challenge we're facing. What we have to do is be strategic and intentional about keeping our net price low. It's a hard conversation to have in the marketplace because everybody looks at sticker. If you look at sticker, it's a more challenging comparison for us. The reality is we're using that flexibility to discount in a strategic way, particularly for our most needy students.
And do you have anything more? Anything else? No further comment, then I'll call for a vote on the motion on the floor. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Aye.
Motion carries. We now move to the consent items FB 3, 4, and 5, which were not removed. I'll entertain a motion to approve those FB 3, 4, and 5. So moved. Do I have a second?
Me, second.
Good. Any comments or questions on the consent items? Hearing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Carries. And that is it.
All right. We had some other business and announcements, and President Bunny, I don't know if you had anything else you wanted to bring before us today.
Here, Vale, I have one thing. Some of you have partaken in King Cake, and I've not yet heard who managed to find the baby, because whoever did, this is like, I remember being in New Orleans, you have King Cake, and I think I remember even, who got the baby?
I don't know, everybody's looking.
Who got
the baby?
Got it. Who owes us a King Cake next year? I remember being in kindergarten and being terrified that I was going to have to go home and get my family to buy a King Cake for the next Friday, so much so that I think there was one young man who actually swallowed the baby intentionally and did not have to make that purchase. So glad to see Shannon will be buying next year's King Cake. The other is, we're all about recruitment here and making sure we recruit the next generation of Hilltoppers. And we have two new members of the class of 2041 who just joined us in this world. And so I want to congratulate Regent Porter, whose grandson was born December 21st, William Cravens Porter, class of WKU class of 2041, and also Linda Ball, whose granddaughter was just born, and Kate Albright joining us on February 26th. Congratulations to both of you, and I think we have some Hilltopper wear for them to get them started early. And that's all.
Okay. Speaking of disruption, which George brought up, I think we're in for a treat. We're going to leave here and visit the Center for Innovative Teaching and Learning. I have been through this center, and I think it's efforts like that and what they're doing to employ brain research and what it tells us on how we all process information and learn today, but the different ways of doing pedagogy, which I think are going to separate winners and losers in higher ed going forward. I believe last week there was a major conference on our campus. Jerry Day, the former head of our center, came back to participate and help coordinate that, but I understand it was a magnificent success. We had people from over 70 other universities come and talk about innovative teaching and learning and some of the things that we'll see on this tour. So I'm excited about it, and I hope others will be too when we go through that. If anyone is interested in going to the National Conference in Orlando in mid-April, let us know. It's
April 15th through the 17th.
April 15th.
In Orlando.
So, Regent McKinney looks them out.
And with that,
Well, I just wanted to tell you all something funny. I wanted to, you all, when we attended the CPE board training and workshop, you all met Vasu. I don't know if you remember Vasu, who had the binder to show Provost Ballman, Dr. Gaboni, of his daughter applying to Gaddy Academy. Well, they ended up coming, and she's been accepted. She's had her interviews, excuse me. Her name's Kava, but he sent me a very nice note thanking WKU and highlighting some special people. He said the Gatton team of professors, Miss Beth, Dr. Pogge, and others put together a very smooth and phenomenal experience for the parents as well as my daughter. And I just thought that was really kind of something neat to pass along to let people know what we really do and what impression we made, because Vasu is actually a board of regent for Eastern Kentucky University. So the fact that his daughter wants to attend here at the Gatton Academy, and we've developed a friendship. Prior to this, Julia had helped set up a tour for them to come. Oh, sorry, Julia. Helped me set up a tour for them to come, I guess it was last fall, and came through, and they've been doing it. But the funniest thing about the whole binder thing was Vasu told me he wanted to bring something to show Dr. Gaboni and Provost Ballman, and I thought it was going to be a slip of paper. I didn't realize we were going to get this black binder, and he showed every page to Provost Coleman. I mean, every single page. The one funny comment about it was that Kayla's picture, she was wearing royal blue for a headshot to Gatton Academy.
Dr. Someone may have pointed that out.
He did. And I want you to know it has been shaved. You cannot follow up. She's now wearing red in her headshot. So I just wanted to let you all know that we have a really good reputation, and for him to have sent a note, tell me how wonderful it was, and I actually forwarded that note on to Dr. Cavoni and Provost Baldwin, because I think it's quite says quite something about this university and Gatton Academy.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else that would like to?
Motion to adjourn.
Motion.
Second.
Second to adjourn. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign.